Love a good mystery that leaves you wanting more? Check out my podcast. Hi, I'm Kadra, the host of Perplexity, a Mystery Podcast. I tell tales every single week that have left me perplexed. You'll hear true crime cases, mysterious disappearances, learn about cults, hear baffling sightings of cryptids, chilling paranormal encounters, and even dark and weird history. I release new episodes every Wednesday, and you can listen anywhere podcasts are available. I'm also on Patreon, and you can even watch me on YouTube. Perplexity, a Mystery Podcast. Stories that will leave you perplexed.
Believe me, if I started murdering people, there'd be none who get left.
We are all evil in some form or another.
Now, I am not guilty.
Today is one of those cases, it's very recent, and I can tell you like every little detail and do like a 3-hour episode on it, going over every piece in big detail, or I can give you like a quick rundown spanning only 30 minutes. So I've decided to kind of split the difference and give you the details that I think are interesting and important. So if you have been following this particular case out of Australia and you know all of the ins and outs, do not get upset with me if I miss something or skip over something or kind of generalize some parts. I know that there is more to some things, but I want to give you the real gist of it without missing out on any important details, but not get bogged down with the details, if that makes sense. This is the murders of Heather Wilkinson and Gail and Don Patterson. Don and Gail Patterson lived in Kurumburra, Australia, as a small town of about 5,000 people southeast of Melbourne. They raised 4 children in their home, Matthew, Nathan, Anna, and Simon, and they were deeply devout Christians who attended church services every Sunday at the local Baptist church, where Gail's sister, Heather, had married the church's pastor, Ian Wilkinson. And the Patterson's son, Simon, was married to a woman named Erin, and the couple had a son that was born in 2009 and then a daughter born in 2014. They had married in 2007 after meeting while working for the city of Monash 3 years earlier. They were both sort of city council, or both on the city council at the time. Erin was working for the RSPCA. She was a representative for them. And Simon was a civil engineer. Erin had grown up in Melbourne in the subdivision of Glen Waverley. Her parents were Heather and Eaton, and she had a sister as well named Siwin, I think that's how you pronounce it, with which she was not very close with her. Erin had come from money. Like, her mother, Heather, had been an author and had worked as a professor at the Monash University teaching 19th century literature. As a result, Erin had grown up to be very educated, and she really loved to learn new things. Simon had been an engineer with Gippsland, and he also coached basketball in his younger years. The marriage was a bit marred with some arguments, with temporary splits here and there. The couple officially separated in 2015, but wouldn't start actually trying to really hash out the divorce details for about another 8 years. After their separation, though, they continued to work together as co-parents, and they even took their family vacations together to kind of give the kids that sense of normalcy and the appearance of a united front. Erin had gotten her bachelor's degree in nursing and midwifery at the Federation University. She was able to live a very comfortable life due to this $2 million inheritance that she had received in 2006 from her grandmother. This had allowed her to try out like a few different careers paths over the years, including working for a time for the city as an air traffic controller. And she also opened her own secondhand bookstore, which specialized in self-help books and then true crime. And by 2023, she had decided on nursing as kind of her latest endeavor. Erin was very generous with her inheritance and had used some of the funds that she had to help out Simon's siblings as well. After their separation, Erin moved with the kids to Leongata, which is another rural small community also southeast of Melbourne, very close to Kurumburra. Erin was also a bit of a true crime buff. She had joined this Facebook group, she's kind of cyber sleuthing this Kelly Lane case. She was a woman that had been convicted of killing her two-day-old daughter. There was a whole podcast that was dedicated to her case in 2018. And so she had become online friends with many of the posters on this Facebook group. And beyond sharing her sleuthing and research skills with them, she also sometimes shared, you know, some anecdotes about her life. Erin was kind of known as being a little bit eccentric and did at times have some issues with some social awkwardness. She was described as a bit abrasive by her air traffic control coworkers. Simon was always on kind of the losing end of their separations in the marriage. He was often left feeling off, like confused over why she was leaving each time. And one time in 2009, she had sort of up and left the family while they were on a road trip through South Australia. But Simon was always wanting to work things out to kind of keep the family happy and together. And he chalked most of her leaving and this kind of weird behavior up to her kind of being a wandering soul, always kind of bouncing around from interest to interest. She got bored very easily. She, of course, skipped jobs and these career choices constantly. And her true crime fandom was also seen as a little bit obsessive by some. The couple had spent most of their marriage living in Kurumburra to be close with Simon's family, including his siblings and his parents. And this was before Erin had moved to Leongata with the kids, but she still had regular contact with Simon and his parents, Gail and Don. They also continued to attend the same Baptist church where Simon's aunt, Heather, like Gail's sister, was married to the pastor of the church, Ian. However, Erin was supposedly an atheist, but she was attending the services with Simon and the kids because, you know, she respected their beliefs, but she didn't exactly buy into it herself. Although she does say that after 2015, she did convert to Christianity after having like some kind of religious experience that she'd never really elaborated on. Later in 2015, during this separation, Simon would take the kids on the weekends and then Erin would have them during the week. Simon had remained in Kurumburra and then Erin in Leongata, but the two towns were close enough together to not make it really a burden on either one of them, and their relationship remained very friendly. And then in 2019, Erin's mother passed away, leaving her a second inheritance. Now, I'm not sure of the actual amount of that inheritance, but she did wind up inheriting her mother's oceanfront sprawling property in Glen Waverley, and was, of course, it was considered enough money to make her independently wealthy. She also had enough to purchase another property on Gibson Street in Leongata. But both the houses, she put for some reason in both her and Simon's names on the deeds. They were still legally married at the time, and Simon kind of felt that was kind of a sign that she still had some feelings for him. Like he still had hopes that they would get back together again someday because the divorce hadn't really been moved on by that time. Like they hadn't really started actual divorce proceedings. Now, unfortunately, Simon started to have some health issues in 2021, which had started in November of that year when the day before the family was going to go on this camping trip, he got violently ill and yet still managed to go on this trip, making many, many stops along the way for him to either vomit or use the washroom. So when they arrived, he was so ill that he actually had to be hospitalized. And they found that his creatine levels were so high in his kidneys that they were actually starting to fail. So after a few days in the hospital, he was stabilized and then he was discharged and he was able to go home. But then in May of 2021, he got sick again. This time they were also camping, but they were at a national park at that time. So this time when he went to the hospital, he was treated with IV fluids and then discharged, but then he had to be rushed back because he collapsed when he got home. So in the end, he was left having three surgeries removing this large section of his lower intestines. He was in a coma for 16 days and spent 3 weeks in the ICU without them really figuring out what the root cause of the issue was. It wasn't really suspected to be food poisoning because it came on several hours after he had eaten anything and not right away. And during this last particular stay in the hospital, Aaron and his parents were called actually to come and say goodbye to him. But fortunately, he was able to recover, but he was still pretty weak and fairly ill. And so he came to stay with Aaron and the kids for a few weeks in Leongata. Now, the same thing happened to him again in July of 2022, and then again in September of 2022. Now, both of those were also on family camping trips and resulted this time in some seizures that he was having. So Simon started like a spreadsheet for himself to try and figure out what could possibly be triggering these horrendous episodes that he was having. And he started to wonder if Aaron was trying to poison him, because it always seemed to be after Aaron had prepared something for him to eat. He told his doctors this, but they didn't think so because it wasn't really food poisoning, they thought. And he even went so far as to confide in his parents, who thought like he's being crazy. Him and Aaron had had a good relationship. Even though they were separated, there was no reason that she would want to make him sick. Like, she had initiated the separations. She had no financial motive. She was kind of technically the breadwinner with all her inheritances. But he did kind of decide after that he wasn't going to eat anything that she gave him after that. He got even more suspicious one time when Aaron brought him some cookies. Now, she said that their daughter had made them for him, but he didn't eat them right away. And then Aaron started calling him, asking him all the time, like, have you eaten the cookies yet? Have you eaten the cookies yet? And he found that really weird. And so he wound up actually throwing them out. Now, he would later wish that he had kept them and gotten them tested. But in November of 2022, Aaron noticed that Simon had entered separated on his tax return, which was, of course, the actual state of their relationship for several years at that point. But the separated thing really pissed Aaron off because they hadn't had like a formal separation agreement, like child support. She then, of course, filed for after noticing this, but Simon had actually stopped working by that point because he had been quite sick. So she didn't really get any child support out of him. And this kind of started a little bit of a breakdown of the relationship between the two of them. She had been, of course, very generous with her inheritance, which is excluded from marital property in most places. I don't know if it is in Australia. And she felt that she had now kind of been maybe taken advantage of. She had lent his siblings this interest-free loan to buy their house and had recently started feeling a little bit left out of some of Simon's family gatherings because they were, you know, slowly starting to distance themselves from her, not inviting her to some family functions, etc., which I think is actually pretty normal. Like, even when you've been married and part of a family for a number of years, if there's like a separation or a divorce, you don't normally maintain that same relationship with your ex's parents. Like, it becomes kind of weird, I think, after that. But it started to annoy Aaron, and she was feeling really hurt by that. But what really broke the relationship down for good between the two of them was Simon not paying towards some surgery costs for their son, who had some kind of health issue. Now, he says that he was instructed by his lawyer not to pay it, and she was really pissed off about that. And I really don't blame her, like, in her feelings for that. I believe, looking back, I think Simon would agree that he was being kind of a dick about money. But what Aaron does about all of this, well, is just not acceptable, which I'm going to get to. I just need you to be patient for a little bit.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Well, things kind of boiled over when Simon's dad, Don, suggested that he simply go back and then just amend his return to not separated, like back to married. To which Aaron rightly said along the lines of, like, oh, so we're supposed to admit to the government that we've been lying to them? Like, I only filed as still married because I trusted Simon that when push came to shove, he would do right by us. And by doing so, I didn't claim for any of the child support and any of the child tax benefits that I should have received all this time because she had primary custody of the kids. So no, we aren't going to go back now. And he needs to kind of step up and with this child support and the payments towards their son's surgery. So during all of this, Erin took to her Facebook group regarding the Kelly Lane, the true crime one, where she had made some friends and then bitched about the issues that she was having with Simon, like venting to them. It was clear to them that the relationship between not just Erin and Simon, but the parents was also starting to kind of degrade. Just feelings like they're taking his side and not requiring him to step up. And she kind of said that she was done with them, feeling like she just wasn't getting supported through them. And frankly, it would be more honest to say that in Aaron's mind, at least, she had been feeling or starting to feel abandoned by them. So things had cooled between them, but not to like the all-out screaming and yelling stage, just kind of things were getting a little bit distant, and the text messages between them were just kind of short answers and just very short conversations. Well, on June 16th, 2023, Erin attended the Baptist church and she invited Simon, Gail, and Don over for lunch on the 29th of June. She had wanted to discuss a health concern that she was having and how to sort of approach the kids about it. Oddly, she also invited the pastor, Ian Wilkinson, and his wife, Heather. Now, Heather, of course, was actually Gail's sister, so Simon's aunt. So Ian and Heather had known Erin and had been to some family gatherings that she was also at over the years, but they had never actually been invited over to her house. Now, they did think being included was a little bit strange, especially since it appeared that she had, you know, something rather personal and maybe private to discuss, but Heather was kind of excited. She wanted to see Erin's house and, you know, maybe probably get a little bit of gossip. Well, on the 28th, so the day before this planned lunch, Simon texted Erin saying, "Sorry, I feel too uncomfortable about coming to the lunch with you, Mom, Dad, and Heather and Ian tomorrow, but I am happy to talk about your health and implications of that at another time if you'd like to discuss on the phone." Erin replies back, "That's really disappointing. I've spent many hours this week preparing lunch for tomorrow, which has been exhausting in light of the issues I'm facing, and spent a small fortune on beef eye fillet to make beef Wellingtons because I wanted it to be a special meal as I may not be able to host a lunch like this again for some time." Well, Simon did not relent and he did not attend the lunch. Instead, on the 29th, he arranged to pick the kids up from the movies later that afternoon. Erin had not really wanted them to be in attendance, so she had arranged like a day at the movies for them instead. She had sort of hinted that she had some really bad news for them regarding her health status. So Gail and Don picked up Heather and Ian, and they all arrived together right around 12:30. They came in and kind of gathered in the kitchen as you normally do at like dinner or lunch parties. And according to Ian, Erin had prepared these individual beef Wellingtons, which I have never had one, but they sound actually really delicious, like a fillet of beef coated in like this kind of mushroomy sauce thing and then wrapped in a pastry. She also served mashed potatoes and green beans, and she didn't serve it family style, but she had plated them all like fancy-like. Ian and Heather kind of gossiped a little bit after the lunch that it was strange that she had served the four of them on these like really pretty kind of fancy gray colored plates, and that but that hers had been on like a different colored orange colored plate. And they thought that that was odd, that somebody with the kind of money that Erin had, that she wouldn't have like a full serving set of one colored plates, or she would go through the effort of like, you're going to have this big fancy meal and not like set the table with either matching plates or alternate plates for color and decoration or whatever rich, fancy people do. I mean, in our house, house guests will get whatever plates we have the least amount of scratches or chips on them, and they could be of a variety of different colors dating back to about 1992 when I first moved out from my family home. But I am not fancy and I do not entertain very much. Anyways, during the meal, she had told them that she had been diagnosed with ovarian cancer and she was going to be going through some treatments, and she had wanted them to know this so that because she might need some help like with the kids and some of that stuff. So they had said like a prayer for her. I mean, if you invite the pastor over for dinner, atheist or not, there's going to be some prayers. Conversation then kind of lingered and then the meal ended. Now, according to Ian, the food was really delicious. Like all was good. Well, other than the fact that Erin said she had cancer. And the next morning, Don and Gail called Simon and told him that they had actually been really ill all night and had taken themselves to the hospital. So Simon then called his sister Anna and had told her what was going on. Now, she had spoken to her parents about 5 p.m. the night before, so well after the lunch, and had asked them how the lunch had gone. It went actually very well. And she told Anna that she hadn't been able to finish all of the Wellington that she had, but she had given the rest of it to her husband, Don, and he'd eaten the rest of it. When Don had called Simon, though, by 11 that morning, they had been up since around midnight with vomiting and diarrhea. And so Simon talked to Erin, who mentioned that she hadn't been really feeling all that well that night either, but was just kind of soldiering it on at home, as he said. However, Erin thought that she wasn't feeling well because after the guests had left, she had kind of binge eaten an entire cake that Gail had brought as dessert. But when learning that Gail and Don were sick, though, she thought, oh, like, this might be food poisoning. What Simon and Anna didn't know at this point was that their aunt and uncle Heather and Ian had also been quite ill during the night and were also in the hospital, but they were in the hospital at Leongatha. So Heather and Ian had arrived and the doctors there had immediately suspected food poisoning, and so they were treating them as such. However, when Gail and Don arrived, they were moved to a bigger hospital, which I believe was in Victoria, because Currumburra didn't really have either the facilities to treat them or they were busy, or I'm not really sure. And a doctor there, the hospital in Victoria, thought based on how long it had taken for the symptoms to kind of come up, that it wasn't food poisoning. And based on the liver tests that they were given and the fact that their last meal had been this beef Wellington, it looked more like they had consumed something called deathcap mushrooms, which contain a very bad toxin that you cannot cook it out, you can't boil it out, fry it out, nothing. These mushrooms are, like, mushrooms in general are pretty dangerous when you don't know what you're eating anywhere. But of course, leave it to Australia to have something actually called deathcap mushrooms, which are like deadly, deadly. Now, normally food poisoning will set in right away, or at least pretty quickly after you eat, your body's way of just kind of getting rid of it. And this wasn't just like a bug, like they were violently ill and it was already starting to shut down their livers when they had discovered that Heather and Ian were at the hospital in Leongatha. The doctor had called over there right away. And so they had then changed and started treating them for this. There's an antidote, I guess, for the mushroom poisoning as well. But a lot of the damage had already been done. Erin Patterson had told her kids that she wasn't feeling really well the night before. The night of the lunch as well, but she had kind of continued on with her evening. So she wasn't sick. She just said she wasn't feeling well. Now she served the kids their dinner around 5 p.m., which she later told the doctors was leftovers from the lunch, like the beef Wellingtons, but she had scraped the mushrooms out of it or off of them because the kids didn't like mushrooms. Well, the next morning, so the 30th, when everyone was at the hospital, Erin drove the kids to school and then asked Simon to take her to the hospital because at this point she was, what my husband likes to so eloquently say, pissing out of her ass and was worried that she'd have an accident or something like that because she was now sick as a dog. But Simon was at the hospital with his parents, and as soon as he'd heard words like liver failure, toxin, and mushrooms, he was suspicious and now very pissed off that Erin had been the reason that they were sick and had told her to find her own way to the hospital politely. But yes, she better get in because it looked like it was death cap mushrooms and was a very bad thing. So Erin arrived at the hospital in Leongata. So that was the one that Ian and Heather were at 8:05 a.m. And as soon as the doctor who was treating Ian and Heather hear that she's come in, a bunch of people rush down to the triage to grab her and get her tested and treated right away, because this is very bad news. Only she's saying, no, I don't want to be admitted or treated. She said she needed to make arrangements to, you know, pick up her kids or something like that. She's like, I can't be here. I don't want any of this. And the doctor and the nurse are like, look, lady, like you could die. And she's like, nope, I'm going to sign myself out against medical advice. And I'll be back in like a half an hour when I sort of get some things organized. And legally, they can't really stop her. So she left. Now, there is something really kind of interesting about her arrival at the hospital that doesn't really get talked about very much. She told Simon that she's having these GI issues all night long and all morning and really bad, and she didn't want to drive herself to the hospital because, you know, she might have an accident. But she's wearing white pants. Now, as someone who has inflammatory bowel disease, I only ever wear black pants, skirts, and underwear. No, I have never had an issue in public. Never. Anytime I could have worn anything that I wanted to, but I don't like to live life on the edge. Like, I am not a risk taker. So does that seem like a good fashion choice on this particular day? Anyways, half an hour goes by. She doesn't return. So one of the doctors calls her and she doesn't answer. And he calls her three times and leaves three very urgent voice messages imploring her to come back in. And in the last message, she says, look, if you do not come back in or answer, I am going to have to send the police to do a welfare check on you, which he then does. Like, he calls the police to go do this welfare check.
Hello, what is Christina the police?
This is Dr. Chris Webster calling from Leongatha Hospital. And I have a concern regarding a patient that presented here earlier but has left the building
and is potentially exposed to a fatal toxin from mushroom poisoning.
And I've tried several times to get hold of her on her mobile phone.
When did she present at hospital?
8:05
today.
Yeah.
The mushroom poisoning you hit.
Yeah, so there were five people that ate a meal on Saturday, and the two of them are in intensive care at Dandenong Hospital. Two have just been transferred from Leongatha Hospital to Dandenong Hospital.
And Erin presented this morning with symptoms of poisoning.
And what happened when she presented? She just got up and left?
No, she there was time for the nurse to begin observations, and I was managing the other critically unwell patient, so I had a brief chapter about where the mushrooms were obtained.
And after that, while I was attending the other patients, the nurse informed me that she had discharged herself against medical advice.
I don't know exactly. Oh, we've got a form here. Hang on, just tell me what time she left.
No, it doesn't have a time.
She was only here for 5 minutes.
Well, while the police are on their way to her house to check on her, she does arrive back at the hospital at 9:48 a.m., only she still does not want any treatment. Like, they want to give her this liver detox thing, and they ask her a few questions, like, who else ate this beef Wellington? And, of course, where did you get the mushrooms? And asking her, like, don't you at least want some fluids through your IV? I mean, you've said you've been uncontrollably vomiting and pooping for hours now. But no, she doesn't want any of that. She also never gets up or rushes to the bathroom on any occasion that anybody noticed. She did, however, mention that she had eaten this cake, so she had started to throw up probably a lot earlier than the others, so maybe a lot of the toxins had been expelled before they could kind of make her even sicker. She told them that she had bought some fresh button mushrooms from the Woolworths, or Woolies as they like to call it there, and a few months earlier she had gotten some dried mushrooms from this Chinese grocery store. But she couldn't remember, like, where exactly this store was or what the name of the place was. She had thrown out the packaging at the time when she bought it, and they were kept instead in this Tupperware container in her pantry. She also then mentioned giving the kids some leftovers, so they told her, okay, like, you have to get them in right away as well. And she tells them, well, no, I don't really want to pull them out of school because I don't want to scare them. And one of the doctors goes so far as to say something along the lines of, like, lady, like, do you want scared kids or do you want dead kids? Needless to tell you that people are starting to get a little bit suspicious of Erin, that she has purposely fed her guests these death cap mushrooms. Now, she's maintaining that if that had happened, like, if, you know, they had consumed these mushrooms from her, it was this horrible accident, and blame this Chinese grocer for selling them, who she doesn't remember where that was or even when she actually bought them. So just after she had arrived back at the hospital the second time, the police, who had been called by the doctor to do this welfare check, arrived at her house. So she's on the phone now with the police, and she tells them that she's any of the leftovers she had thrown in the garbage, and they should be in the outside trash. So they were able to collect them and then bring them into the hospital to do some testing on them. She also relents and phones Simon to have him go and pick the kids up from school and then take them to the hospital in Victoria, where their grandma and grandpa are, and that she is requesting, rather demanding, that she be transferred where they are as well, which they did agree to, and they transported her by this 90-minute ambulance ride. And during, of course, this trip, she never once mentioned needing to throw up or stop for, like, a poop break. And she didn't really seem to anyone that was watching her, noticing her, that she was in any way unwell, despite her telling them that she was sick and had been sick for hours by that point. The leftovers were tested initially upon visual, sort of like a cursory inspection. They did not contain any death cap mushrooms. However, the toxins that they were found when they tested the leftovers a little bit more scientifically, suggesting that they had been maybe ground up into, like, a powder or something like that instead of served, like, chopped up. So clearly there is suspicion that Erin has poisoned her lunch guests. And rather than go into, like, a lot of detail about when she said what and whether it was in a police interview or court testimony, like, I don't want to confuse you with a bunch of, like, dates and places and kind of backtracking over thing. So I'm just going to go through So the inconsistencies and the evidence that was brought up against Aaron over this poisoning of the mushrooms. And before I do that, I do just want to mention that the kids were questioned. They did say that they had eaten some kind of meat dish that their mom had given to them on the night of the 29th, but it did not resemble any kind of Wellington anything. So they don't believe that the kids consumed any of these deadly mushrooms. So they were all good and they did not get sick. However, 6 days after being admitted to the hospital, Dawn Patterson died at the age of 70. And then the next day, Gail and Heather Wilkinson, her sister, passed away as well. Gail was 70 and Heather was 66. Ian had received a liver transplant and did manage to make a recovery. He was released from the hospital on September 22nd. Now, there are reports that kind of changed those timelines a little bit, that Heather and Gail had died on August 4th and then Dawn had died on August 5th. But regardless, all three of them were not able to recover from their poisoning. So I'm going to break this into categories because there's just a lot of stuff that sort of stacked up against Aaron and I need to kind of unpack it in some kind of order. So we need to go back a little bit to the purchase of the dried mushrooms. Now, Erin said that the reason she had bought them in the very first place was that she wanted to make some kind of carbonara sauce with them that she was planning on doing for something. But when she took them out of the package, she didn't really like how they smelled and felt that they wouldn't be a really good addition for this particular sauce. So instead of chucking them, she put them into this Tupperware container. And then when she pulled them out again to use them in some other recipe, they were now kind of a little bit rubbery and she didn't like the texture of them. So she figured she could maybe fix that by putting them into her food dehydrator. But that did not really help them. And again, instead of just throwing them out and deciding they were kind of useless, she decides to use these smelly, rubbery mushrooms in her special meal that she was having because she thought it would add a really nice flavor. So that's a little bit odd. What's odder is that she initially denies having a food dehydrator at all. However, when confronted with the fact that she had in her possession, like in her house, a receipt for a food dehydrator, she had mentioned this food dehydrator to her Facebook group and even posted a picture of it for them, and told Simon that she had been using her food dehydrator to dehydrate specifically mushrooms to make a mushroom powder to hide in muffins for the kids to get them to eat their vegetables. Now, she did say at that time, oh yeah, I did have a food dehydrator, but I didn't use it for the mushrooms that were going into the Wellington. Now, that food dehydrator was found in a landfill, which she was caught on surveillance footage dumping it, the day that she was actually released from the hospital from, of course, not being sick from the mushrooms that everybody else was sick from. Also, going back in time, she says that she never foraged for wild mushrooms. It was something she didn't do. And any mushrooms she ever had were from either Woolworths or this mysterious Chinese grocery store. However, she later claimed that, well, actually, I did forage for it. It had actually become a recent hobby for me. And she liked to, again, post about that on this Facebook group. She admitted that it was possible that she had accidentally foraged some death cap mushrooms and then put them into the same container as these purchased dried mushrooms. However, it would be a strange accident seeing that there is this website that is called iNaturist, where on April 18th, a user had posted that they had seen death cap mushrooms in the area of Locke, just off of Nielsen Street, so be careful. On April 28th, her car was actually seen parked off of Nielsen Street in this area for about a half an hour. And then she was suddenly posting about dehydrating mushrooms on this Facebook group. Then on May 22nd, location data shows that she returned to that same area same area again. And on May 28th, her laptop was used to access the site again, where another user had spotted more death cap mushrooms in a different area. Now, after this site was accessed, like within seconds, there was a food purchase ordered using the same laptop that was delivered to her house on Gibson Street, meaning it was likely her that had used that, done that search. Now, as for the reason for her lunch party in the first place, she only kind of hinted at them that she was going to reveal some kind of health thing. Well, Ian said no. She clearly said in no uncertain terms that she had been diagnosed with ovarian cancer. In fact, Ian had said to Simon when he came to visit them in the hospital, as sick as he was, that he felt really bad about her diagnosis. And Simon was like, "What are you talking about? This is news to me." Well, Erin maintains that no, she told them that she was going to be having bariatric surgery, like stomach stapling for weight loss, and would need some help while she recovered. But when kind of pressed about the issue, she said, well, she might have mentioned that she was undergoing some tests and was getting an MRI about the possibility of ovarian cancer, but nothing had come out of that yet. But the police weren't able to find any medical records of any tests that she had done for anything between 2021 and 2023. Now, she admitted in her testimony that she was actually embarrassed about this gastric bypass thing and figured it was better to kind of lure them to lunch with hinting about cancer. She sounds lovely. It's also strange that she had felt abandoned by Simon's parents, but they were the very people that she felt that she wanted to reach out to have this lunch and tell them about this private surgery thing she was going through. They also discovered on her phone Google searches about ovarian cancer, like symptoms and tests that you might get, etc. Erin had a phone, like we all do. She had purchased a new phone in February of 2023 and was using it as her exclusive phone up to August 2nd. She had a pink case that she had for it, and this pink case phone had replaced another similar phone that she had given then to her son back in February for him to use. And at that time, he did a factory reset on it at the time. There was also a third phone. This was a Nokia, which I believe was one of those no-frill burner type of phones. Both her pink case phone and her son's iPhone had separate SIM cards in them. It's all the thing about the phone is all very confusing, and I don't think a lot of it, like a lot of things, were actually found on the phones. But on August 2nd, Erin did another factory reset to the phone that she had given to her son, and then that was the phone that she turned over to the police. She put the SIM card from her pink case phone into the Nokia phone, and the pink case phone was never turned over and has never been found, and there's all kinds of suspiciousness about that. Now, August 2nd was also the same day that Erin was seen at the landfill dumping the food dehydrator, and was also the same day that they executed the search warrant at her house. Erin denied ever owning any gray plates. Like, Ian must have been mistaken. Everything was served on the same color plates. But surveillance footage shows her, now this is 30 minutes after the lunch ended, at the landfill again, like the same one that she later goes to dump the food dehydrator. And she's at that time disposing of something in like a box, which was later found to contain four gray plates. Now, she denies that this is what she threw away, and it's just all a coincidence that there were gray plates found there. But the timing doesn't really look very good for her. And then when it comes to her own illness from this accidental poisoning, well, first of all, she never mentioned to anyone about mushrooms. Not even after learning that they suspected death cap mushrooms. She says she never mentioned it because she was scared that people would think that she did it on purpose. And then she never mentioned it later because, well, they were already being treated with this antidote, so what good would it do to mention it at that point? Now, she says that she was feeling sick as well, but she continued to do a bunch of errands that same night and the next day, including dumping food dehydrators, before going to the hospital, and was walking around in white pants and not looking sick and refused treatment. Now, surprisingly, she did testify on her own behalf at her trial, which was for 3 counts of murder and 1 count of attempted murder. She did not do well, you could say, and she came off as smug and kind of strange. She also appeared a bit like a pathological liar. At one point, she's asking this lawyer who's questioning her that, you know, could she move her mouth like away from the microphone because she was hearing impaired and she needed to read her lips, even though she had never mentioned to another human being, including Simon, that she had any issues with her hearing. She kind of just had an answer for everything and denied having said certain things that she clearly did say.
There are several lies Erin Patterson has admitted to during the trial, including misleading police and taking steps to conceal potential evidence. But the prosecution has argued she lied about more than that. In delivering his charge to the jury, Justice Christopher Beale recapped the prosecution's allegations of Ms. Patterson's incriminating conduct, including suggestions the mother of two also lied about becoming sick after the meal and that she fed the leftovers of the beef Wellington lunch to her children. Justice Beale told the jury that just because the accused lied about one matter, that doesn't mean she lied about others, and telling lies doesn't mean she's guilty. He told jurors to consider all the evidence when deciding if the prosecution has proved beyond reasonable doubt that Erin Patterson is criminally responsible for fatally poisoning her in-laws. He indicated he will finish his charge on Monday, after which the jury will retire to deliberate on a verdict. Ms. Patterson has pleaded not guilty to all charges. Maintaining the deaths of 3 of her in-laws and the poisoning of a 4th was a tragic accident.
So on July 7th, 2025, she was convicted of all counts. Now, she is facing a life sentence and she's going to be sentenced in August. Now, I am recording this in very early August. But by the time this is released, it should be September. So I'm hoping I'll be able to do a little sort of update thing here at the end to tell you exactly what her sentence was. But chances are it's life imprisonment, and it's just a matter of whether or not she's eligible for parole at all. And so that was the murder of Heather Wilkinson and Dawn and Gail Patterson. And I am going to be back again next week with another perplexing case of why people do things that they do. And as always, thank you so much for listening and for watching. Thank you for listening to today's episode. Just a reminder that you can skip the ads by signing up on Patreon to A Million Other Choices. If you or someone you love has been a victim of violent crime, please use your online directory to access victim services available in all provinces, territories, and states. You can find specialized services for children, Aboriginal people, and survivors of domestic violence. Some provinces have injury compensation or financial assistance programs. If you are in immediate danger, call 911. Or if you are thinking of suicide, please call or text 988.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.